Good afternoon. It's another Friday, and this is Dale Allison. You've tuned in to Storm Watch, and for that we are very thankful. We appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to spend some time with us. This is a day today we're going to be considering pay. Pay of a pastor. So if you're someone who's on the finance committee, or if you're on the board, hopefully the information we provide you today is going to be beneficial to you and helpful in terms of your being able to properly structure a financial package for your pastor, and at the same time making sure that it fits within the rules and the guidelines of the Internal Revenue Service, because they have set forth some guidelines as to what is reasonable compensation within their definitions. Now that's something that came about many, many years after God set up his own way of financing what went on at the tabernacle, or at ultimately at the temple. And that was that people brought their tithes and offerings into the tabernacle or the temple, and the Levites were responsible very much for that. And they were able to take care of all of the expenses of the operations of the tabernacle / temple. They were able to take care of the needs of all of the members of the Levitical order, including the high priest, the priest, and the other ancillary staff that worked there. Of course, they were all in the Levitical order, and they were covered in terms of everything that they did. I mean, you're talking about security, janitorials, services. You had those who were involved in managing the money, the treasurers, the praise and worship people. Everything that was done in and around the tabernacle and temple were done by those in the Levitical order. That was their job. That was, in fact, their ministry. So if you were a Levite, you knew what you were going to be doing. You were going to be working in and around the tabernacle or temple. And you had certain jobs that you had to take care of that were entrusted into you and your family. And for that, you were taken care of. If you go back and look at Numbers, Leviticus, and look at the various sacrifices that were made, you realize that sometimes not all the animal was sacrificed. It was not all burnt up. Certain parts of it were cut aside and given to the priests, the high priests, and to the Levites. Those were, so they were taken care of from a meat standpoint. We know that part of the overall tithe was to bring in first fruits. So those people who were into gardening brought in their produce, and those were also distributed amongst all of the Levites. And that's basically how they got along. We also remember that once they got into the promised land, there were certain properties that were set up. We knew them as cities of refuge, where most of the Levitical order lived, and they were provided with accommodations. So once you were a Levite, you were going to be taken care of through the operations of the tabernacle and the temple. going to be fed, clothed, taken care of, everything that you needed to operate was going to happen. It was going to be taken care of for you and your family. No problem at all with that. And God had that set up long before the Internal Revenue Service. He had it completely fixed up. You know, it's amazing when you talk about the overall finances of the church, how that has changed. You know, because back then, everything was turned over to the Levites. They took care of it. You didn't have a group of lay people on a finance committee or on a board of directors. No, these people, this was their life. This was their ministry, and they took care of it. Subsequent years, you set up the church. Many times the pastor was given the money, and it was his responsibility to take care of the church. They needed to have candles. That was his responsibility to buy it out of the money that was brought into the church. He's the one that set up how to pay himself and to pay anyone else who was involved there at the church. Later on, as the church got quote-unquote sophisticated, they brought lay people into the business, the finance committee, and to help supervise the money, to watch over it and make sure that money was properly being spent. For what purpose? Primarily to account to the congregation. Amazing, God didn't ever have that accountability session. You were giving the money to God, so who are you going to be accountable to? You're going to be accountable to God. And you know, you look at Malachi and you hear, you know, bring the tithe to the storehouse. That was an obligation that we had. Bring the tithe to the storehouse. Did you notice it didn't say make the check out to the storehouse? No one said that. We're asking for a check to be made out to the tabernacle or the temple. Or even the storehouse. Your job was to bring it in there and leave it, and then you walked away. Why? None of your business. Well, why is it not my business? I gave. What did you give? You gave your money to God. If you gave it to the storehouse, then you're wrong. You're giving it because you're returning the tithe and the offering to God to spend as He sees fit. Now today, that's not changed. What's changed is God is going to be directing how the money is used through the pastor and the treasurer, finance committee, and the board. They're the ones who are determining how the money is spent. But in reality, it's God's money. That's who you're giving it to. You're not meeting a commitment. You're not meeting a pledge that you gave because the pledge committee came around and said, Brother Jones, what can we account to you for you today? What this coming year, what do you expect to give? Well, I'm going to give $50 a week. Okay, well, thank you very much. We'd like to sign this pledge card. I was in a church like that at one time. And every year I always gave more than I did the previous year. That's just always what I did. but I wouldn't sign the stupid pledge card. And it got them very upset. Dale, we need to count on you. I said, you know, you know what to count on. You're going to receive at least what I gave last year plus. So you don't need to have a pledge card. I don't need to be committed, because in some churches, if you fell behind, hey, they would come and visit you. You got to be kidding. No, exactly what they did. They would come knock on your door. Hey, Brother Dale, how you doing? I'm doing great. Hey, we noticed you've fallen a little bit behind on your pledge. You know, we rely on you to fill that commitment. And, you know, that's not what it was about. What it was about was you had an obligation, or you felt an obligation, to return to God the blessings that he had given you. And he wasn't asking for a whole lot of money. He wasn't saying, hey, I gave you $1 million, give me $900,000 back. He didn't do that. 10% was sufficient. So you gave that out of love, out of obedience. Whatever, you know, was behind your giving, you gave that. And that was your reasonable service, giving your tithe and offering. And when we look at Malachi and we see those familiar scriptures in chapter 3, what do we find? What do we see? Will a man rob God? Didn't say robbing the church. Didn't say robbing the storehouse. Will a man rob God? Well, how have we robbed you in tithes and offerings? Now, we also understand tithes and offerings is what's going to put the grease onto the church wheels. That's what keeps them moving. That's what's going to pay the church bills. That's going to take care of everything from the tithes and offering, including how the man of God's going to get paid. Again, in the old days, you would have given that to the men of God to handle. You wouldn't have made the check out to the storehouse. But today, that's what people do. Well, why? Well, because people got shook up with taxes. And years ago, when income tax first came about, there were no charitable deductions to write off. It was just very simple. Return was like a one-page deal. Just how much money did you make? Give us X percent, and that's it. Pretty simple. Didn't take off for mortgage interest or real estate taxes or medical expenses or contributions. No. Just said, hey, I made $1 million and you want 1% of it, so I'm going to write you a check. And that's the way it was. Pretty simple. But the churches got upset. What's going to happen to us? Gee, if so-and-so is losing 1% by paying the government taxes, are they going to pay our tithes? Are they going to help support the church? Well, if they're a Christian, the answer is yes. If they're your Easter Christmas Christian, the answer is probably no. You got to decide, you know, who are you backing on? Several years ago, the pastor of the church we were going to at the time came out and he began to teach on the way that God had provided support for the church in the old days. And he basically said, you can do one of two things. You can make your check out to the man of God. God's way, or you can make it out man's way and make the check out to the church. Now, doing it God's way, you're not going to get a tax write-off, but doing it man's way, yeah, you would get a tax write-off. And I'm going to tell you, this was not a very scientific survey, but at the time I did income tax preparation for a number of people in our church. And when we implemented this this program, I did income taxes. And it happened to be that three of the people I did income tax for gave directly to the pastor. Another three that I did income tax for, they gave to the church. For a four-year period that I noted the taxes and the results, comparing each year with the previous year, I found out that the three individuals who gave to the pastor had increase in their income from 15% to 20% every year that they gave. Where the three that gave to the church had increase of anywhere from 7% to 12%. Again, not a very scientific approach to it, but basically appeared that the blessing fell on those who gave directly to the pastor. Now, this is just in the way of background, because I'm not trying to tell everybody to start making their checks out to the pastor, not to the church. Don't misunderstand me here. I'm just talking about, we go back to how the system started, how God put his seal of approval and instructions on how to handle everything with regard to the support of the tabernacle / temple. That is background, because what we're talking about today is the pay for the pastor. And to a certain extent, it would have to do with the other staff that the church may be paying. But the church, when it was organized, most of you are in a church that's a corporation. As a corporation, you file articles of incorporation with the Corporation Division of the Secretary of State's office in the state that you're located. And you also file bylaws. And for those churches who want to make sure that they can give tax-deductible receipts, they choose to apply to the Internal Revenue Service to get a tax determination letter that they are tax exempt and that their donations made to them will be tax deductible. So the IRS requires certain language to be in your articles and also in your bylaws. One of the paragraphs that they require reads as follows. No part of the net earnings of the corporation shall inure to the benefit of or be distributable to its members, trustees, officers, or other private persons, except that the corporation shall be authorized and empowered to pay, reasonable compensation for services rendered, and to make payments and distributions in furtherance of the purposes set forth in article whatever hereof. Now, that sets the spending guidelines for the church. No part of the earnings of the corporation shall inure to the benefit or be able to be distributed to members, trustees, officers, employees, whatever. Well, what is inurement? Well, we're not here to study in depth what the inurement is, but inurement is essentially you getting paid for something you did not do, or you're getting paid at a level of compensation that is not reasonable. In other words, if I'm a member of the XYZ church and the pastor comes and says, Dale, I appreciate your faithfulness and all you've done to help us over the years. And we happen to have a really good month this month. And so here's a check for $10,000. Now, what have I done for that? Actually, I've done nothing. Whatever I did was done many years back, because he said this is, you know, for previous stuff, so it can't be that you're compensating me for work that I've done. It's an inurement. And therefore, as an inurement, the church has just violated the terms of its own documentation here, where it said, where they committed that no part of the earnings would inure to me or anyone else other than reasonable compensation. Or if I did do some work, so I sent them a bill and they came in and said, Dale, we appreciate what you've done. We're going to honor your bill for $1,000. But you know what? We want to bless you, so here's a check for $10,000. Well, then what we could say is $9,000 of that is inurement. It's come to me for no apparent reason. Didn't do anything for it. I'm being blessed. You're giving me that kind of money. It's not that I need a benevolence. It's the pastor or the board decided to just give me that money. Well, that's an inurement. You can't do that. Other than reasonable compensation. And that's where the IRS comes in to try to give some understanding, guidelines, because there is no formula. You can't go anywhere and see what is reasonable compensation. They don't say. Why don't they say? Well, because they're the IRS. They don't have to say. They just tell you, here it is. That's why you end up with a lot of people with tax problems, because they don't always give you a quality example. We found out in the past, even if you call the IRS for help with your taxes, they came back and found out that what, 75-80% of the time they give you the wrong answer. Now, are they doing that intentionally? I doubt it. But I also can say that probably a lot of people giving those answers are not the sharpest pencils in the pack. So who can you rely on? Well, you better pray a lot and hope that the Lord can give you guidance. Just like here with reasonable compensation. They don't say what's reasonable. But why? Well, because there's different sized churches. Here's an example of a problem that they had with reasonable compensation. Several years ago, a small country church. The small country church, for the entire year, their tithes and offerings totaled $45,000. They paid their pastor $1,000 a month. Plus, they had like a two-room apartment in the back of the church where he was allowed to live. As surprising as it may seem, he got audited. Now they came to him. I don't know if they audited him because his income was so low, whether they thought he was hiding something, don't really know. But they audited him. And they found out he had this two-room, like apartment, in the back of the church. And so they valued the rental value of that at $3,000 a year. So that meant that he got, from their standpoint, a total of $15,000 from the church whose total income was $45,000. Now they felt that was unreasonable. And they tried to go after him for unreasonable compensation because he had gotten, well, what would essentially be a third of the income of the church came to him in some form or fashion, either in terms of actual cash or in cash equivalent to the value of the apartment. An attorney heard about this and came in to help the pastor for free. And they appealed it to the tax court. And the tax court laughed the IRS out of the court. Came with a ruling for the pastor. Because they said, how can you say unreasonable compensation for somebody who's gotten below the poverty line? But that just shows you how sometimes the IRS takes what seems to be an unreasonable position with regard to this compensation. What about common sense? Well, common sense would have probably told you that this is no place for you to be saying unreasonable compensation. My guy, the guy's just barely getting by to service this church. But as we know, common sense and the Internal Revenue Service are not something you always find in the same sense. Well, again, part of that has to do with the groundwork for what we're getting ready to talk about in terms of overall compensation for the pastor. But let's take a time out here to remind everybody, first of all, you're listening to Storm Watch with Dale Allison, and you're listening on VPN Radio, for which we are all thankful. We appreciate you taking your time. We know your time's valuable, and we hope that we're at least adding some value to the time that you're investing with us here today. But we also want to suggest to you that radio costs money. And the good folks here at BPN Radio are putting on this show and providing other shows 24/7 on this radio station at no cost to you. You don't have to sign into a membership. Get on your computer and you come over to bpnradio.com. You hop on, you hit the broadcast bar, and what happens? You're tuned in to their programming, and you can keep it on all day long. You can keep it on for a couple of shows. Whatever you want to do, you have access to it 24/7. And you have access to our show here at 1 o'clock Friday, and it's 7 o'clock Friday. But folks at BPN Radio, they can't carry the load all themselves, and so we'd like to ask you to pray and ask God whether you can't use some of your offering money to support BPN Radio and its effort to provide this programming to you and to all who are willing to listen. We know that offering money is discretionary money that you have, that God can move on your heart to support various ministries outside of your commitment to your local church. So we would at least ask that you ask in your prayer time and said, you know, God, where should I be sending some of this offering money? And we're hopeful and believe that he will suggest to you that BPN Radio is good ground to plant that money. And you can do so. You can see on the website, there's a donate button. You can handle all that with that, or you can also see there's an address in which you can write a check and send it. We certainly are most thankful for your help and your assistance in that regard. God bless you. Okay, what are we looking at from a biblical standpoint now? Well, let's look at a couple of scriptures that give us some idea. First Timothy chapter 5, we see Paul providing direction to Timothy, which has to do with taking care of those who are taking care of the church. He said, "Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine." Double honor. Basically saying is that your preacher and teacher probably should be paid a little more than your church administrator. He reminds him in verse 18, of a couple of admonitions from the past. You shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain. And the laborer is worthy of his wages. Some versions say the workman is worthy of his hire. What does that mean? Well, that means you ought to pay them right. You ought to make sure that your minister is taken care of financially. He shouldn't have to be out here working a second job to make ends meet. You know, some churches, the way they used to pay their pastor was they would find out who in the church made the most money, which was usually a professional person, and who made the least amount of money, which may have been a widow on Social Security. And they sort of took those two figures, added them together, divided in half, and that's where they felt the pastor should be. That's incorrect. You don't place your pastor's compensation in the middle of the pack of who makes money in the church. Let me suggest something to you. When you look at Numbers, Leviticus, talking about compensation of the Levites, let's drop back a moment and remember that there were 12 tribes. And if you recall, they were going to take out of the 12 tribes, they were dividing up the inheritance of the promised land. And they were going to be dividing it in 12 different ways. But they said the Levites had no inheritance except God. Everyone else was to give 10% to the Levites. Now remember, they took Joseph's kids, Ephraim and Manasseh, and they helped them with the shares to round out the 12 tribes. So what happened? They gave each of them gave a tenth to the Levites. Now, if the Levites had not had God as their inheritance, they would have been entitled to 10%. Okay, let's say a dime. Everybody getting 10% is going to get a dime. But they said the Levites are not going to get a dime because their inheritance is God. But the rest of you are going to provide from your dime 10%, which will then be given to the Levites. So depending on your calculation with Ephraim and Manasseh, whether you believe that created 12 opportunities or 10 opportunities, I mean 11 opportunities. Doesn't really matter for our purpose. So what happened? Each of the remaining tribes, again, whether they're 11 or 12, they all gave a penny. So the Levite was given either 11 cents or 12 cents. Each of the other tribes were left with what? 9 cents. got paid the most? Levites. They weren't part of the middle of the pack. They weren't even equal with their brothers. They ended up more money given to them than their brothers had. So what does that tell us? That tells us that we ought to be treating our pastor a lot better than we are. And this is where the rub comes between what the word says and what the IRS regulations are. The IRS regulations are reasonable compensation. Well, what is reasonable? As we've said, no real guideline on what is reasonable. What's the deal with compensation? What do we look at in terms of how we take care of our pastor? Well, let's look. One of the things we're going to pay is a salary. Probably somewhere along the line, we're going to have some bonuses. Some churches have special love offerings for the pastor and his family. I mean, I knew of one church that had four separate offerings during the year that they provided as a blessing to their pastor. One was what they considered an anniversary. That was the day that the pastor came or started the work. And so every year there was an anniversary gift, a Father's Day gift, a birthday gift, and a Christmas gift. So they provided four different opportunities during the year to give a special offering to the pastor. Pastors also get housing or parsonage. They live in a church parsonage, or they get a housing allowance to help them with their own rent if they don't own a home, or if they do own a home, a housing allowance to help them in the expenses of that home. And there's also some other stuff that come along. Some churches have a credit card that they allow the pastor to use to for meals and such. And many times the pastor will take somebody from the church, maybe a key elder or associate pastor, take them out to have lunch, and they allow that to be part of the pastor's compensation. He can have access to that kind of stuff. There's also other benefits that you get: health insurance, maybe some life insurance or disability. They may want to help the pastor to get a master's degree or a doctor of ministry or something of that sort, so they're willing to help him in a reimbursement program. Also an automobile allowance if he uses his own, or even to secure an automobile in the church's name and allow him to use it on a regular basis. So there's a variety of things that all get added together to look at compensation. So sometimes when we say, well, we're paying our pastor $60,000 a year, and you don't say anything else, well, is that the total compensation or is that his salary? Well, that's his salary. Well, what else are you paying him? Because all of that adds up, and that becomes a total figure. And that becomes the compensation package total. And as far as the IRS is concerned, that total package doesn't all have to be taxable. For example, we know that housing allowance to the pastor is not taxable. We're not, he's not paying any income tax on that. He is paying Social Security on that, but he's not paying income tax. So if you're only adding up what he's paying income tax on, and you're giving him $2,000 a month for housing, there's $24,000 a year he's getting that you're not adding up in his total package, but the IRS is. They're not interested in whether it's taxable or not. They're looking at a total figure to see whether that is reasonable in light of the income of the church. So, again, you have to add these things up. Salary, housing. Yes, we're giving love offerings. Maybe your church is only giving a Christmas offering. Maybe you're like that that other church and you have four of them a year. That money, even though it's a love offering, the way that it's constructed and the way it's collected within the church makes that money you have to account for. That gets added to that figure. Oh, you're providing with health insurance. You're providing with disability insurance. You're providing with education. All that gets added up. So, yes, you're paying him a $60,000 salary, but his total compensation may crank out to be somewhere around $130,000. Depending on the size of the church, someone looks at that and says, is that reasonable or not? Well, if the church only brought in 150 and you're giving 130 to the pastor, in some people's eyes, that would appear to be unreasonable. You're giving him almost everything that came in. So, in order to try to work out a situation where the IRS didn't specifically come out and say, this is reasonable, they gave some guidelines. And they said, we will consider your establishment of compensation to be reasonable if your salary group, whoever that is, finance committee, elders, whatever, if you meet and decide by looking at other churches of similar size in a similar geographic area with a similar cash flow, you compare your pastor with churches within your area, similar size, similar income, and if your guidelines present a compensation package that meets the compensation package of those other churches, then we will consider that as reasonable. If we're going to say it's unreasonable, it then falls on us to have to bring in other testimony before a court to show that it's unreasonable. Otherwise, we're going to assume it's reasonable if you follow those guidelines. Well, most finance groups, finance committee, the board of directors, board of elders, whoever it is that's setting compensation levels, they have a problem. They don't always know how to research that. So a number of organizations started putting together salary surveys that you could draw into, that you could buy. There's several organizations out here that are salary compensation companies. You can invite them in. You can pay them a fee. They will do a lot of this research for you. They will come in and analyze the workload of your pastor, and they will come back with recommendations. They will say, we've looked at this, and we've compared with the various churches of this size and all that kind of stuff to say that we believe somewhere between X dollars and Y dollars that that compensation would be reasonable in light of the Internal Revenue Service regulations and the laws there. Upon doing that, then your committee could meet and you could decide somewhere between X and Y what you want to provide in the way of compensation to your pastor. Now, ideally, what you'd do is you would sit down and you would list all the stuff you're going to pay on his behalf. We're giving him so much housing. We're paying him so much for salary. We're providing him with some insurance. We're providing him with health insurance. All of these have a dollar figure that you can use to add up to see where he falls within X and Y. And then you can provide that to him. Well, what if you don't do that, and there's an audit, and they determine that he got unreasonably high compensation? Well, if that's the case, and you fight it as long as you can fight it, what you'll find is they can pull the status of the church. They can get rid of the tax-exempt status. That is extremely, extremely, extremely rare that that would happen. The other thing that happens is that they would fine the pastor. For example, let's say he got $150,000 and they determined that reasonableness was $120,000. That means he was overpaid by $30,000. One of the requirements will be, A, he has to pay the $30,000 back, plus a 25% penalty, which in this case would be $7,500. So he's having to pay the church $30,000 back. He's having to pay $7,500 to the IRS. And if you're a board member or finance committee member or whatever, and you approve the high salary and they think that you did that recklessly or intentionally, then they can look at that $30,000 excess and say, okay, we're going to assess against you a 10% penalty. And so they would hit you with a $3,000 fine. And so if there's five of you on that finance committee, they would pull out $15,000 worth of fines from that group. That seems to be pretty harsh. Well, it is. But they're trying to determine that that this needs to be a top priority because you are a nonprofit organization, and you should operate like one and spend your money wisely and not imprudently. Well, that's some food for thought for your day, to look at and see what has to be done to provide reasonable compensation to your pastor. Cover him. So hopefully that has been helpful, at least provide some guidelines. If you have a problem, make sure and consult somebody that knows a little bit about what's going on. They can help you set that. Grandma used to say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so rather than have the IRS tell you whether you're right or wrong, get some guidelines from other people. Father, we thank you and we praise you for this opportunity that we've had to come together here today and to be able to share the word and be able to advise folks the proper way to make sure that they comply with the law and that they still receive your blessing. We ask that you provide wisdom to all those who are on finance committees to be able to do that which is right and proper, to be able to bless their pastor, but be able to bless them in a right way that they can show that they are meeting the requirements of paying them reasonable compensation. And for that, we give you the praise, glory, and honor in Jesus' name. Again, this is Dale Allison, Stormwatch on BPN Radio. Thank you for listening. God bless you. Hope to be with you again next Friday. God bless.